I'm going to call the Jobs and Economic Development Committee together to order. I'm going to make a couple of announcements while somebody reads the minutes. You know, I've had a couple of questions about bonding bills and bonding requests. So, in a conversation that I had with the bonding chair, if you have a bonding request that you believe has some validity as an economic development tool, you want to bring it to this committee, and we'll hear the bill here. And if the chair of the bonding committee calls for a list from us, we'll get together and rate them. Otherwise, they will be held over till next year, when she definitely will call for a list of bonding request out of the Economic Development Committee. So, in other words, if you have a bonding request, go ahead, put it in, ask for a hearing, bring your people in, get it on our radar screen. It may raise to the level where the bonding chair wants to take it on and put it on the tour this summer. It may not. That only has small amounts of bearings, but if it's not heard this year, if you've got that request and she doesn't hear about it, she won't put it on the tour. So everyone understands, bring your bonding bills in. Whether they get into a bonding bill this year or next year, they'll still be valid all the way through this legislative session, this biennium. So hopefully I've settled that. And for those members that missed the conversation, I'm sure we'll tell each other what they need to bring them here for. So, having said all that, there's also an announcement that I'll do before we do the minutes, is one of the medical device companies has said that they would be interested in hosting a tour of their facility this Friday. Very, very short notice. They're at corporate headquarters. I will get an invite out this afternoon or tomorrow morning. I'm probably going to go. And they said they can take up to 10, 15 people. So if you're interested and you get the invite, just respond.
Okay. Mr. Chair, where is this located?
I believe it's the one out in Little Canada. There's three locations, and pretty sure it's Little Canada, but I want to make sure before I mention everything.
Mr. Chair, do we have a time frame yet on that?
No, but like I say, it'll be on the invite, and okay. You know, just so it's on your radar screen. I mean, I know our schedules are very, very tight around here, and the sooner I can get it on your calendar or on your awareness, you can look at it on your calendar, see if it fits in on Friday morning, about 10 o'clock in the morning, be an hour, hour and a half, and a tour. So I'm going to, Representative Gunter, have you looked at the minutes?
I thoroughly read them and totally agree with them, and I move we approve them.
All right. All those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Today we have one bill on our agenda, and just so everyone knows that we had a second bill that dropped off because we couldn't get an amendment put together by 12 o'clock yesterday. So we'll hear that bill later on this week or next week sometime. It's the trade office bill. They're trying to work on an amendment, and it was not staff's fault, it was members' fault. So we will just blame ourselves for that, not staff. So, with having said that, Representative Mullery, I think you have a bill up today.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Never blame staff. They get even.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 46 and be laid over for possible inclusion in your bill.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. please describe your bill and bring your witnesses forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill is specifically for the Neighborhood Development Center. For
if I might interrupt you, you might want to have your witnesses sit.
I thought
they can easily sit down. And
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't notice that they were
fine
standing. This is for the Neighborhood Development Center for developing and supporting entrepreneurial skills and job creations in various communities. And as it says, they can be used for business plan training, business workshops, technical assistance to small business owners, development and support of business incubators, entrepreneurial network development, expansion of entrepreneurial capacity in communities. Basically, anything that helps further develop very small businesses and people who are just starting them. Probably most of you have heard of the Global Market, which is in the old Sears building on Lake Street in Minneapolis and right in Karen Clark's district. That's maybe the most famous one done by the Neighborhood Development Center. They also did another one across the street from her district, which is well known, the Mercado, and University Dale is another one. I can attest for the fact that I've talked to many, many dozens of people that had their businesses started with the help of the Neighborhood Development Center and also with NEON, and Grover Jones is from NEON here. We are in a situation where our economy is becoming less stable than it was for most of the last century, where everybody went to one company after high school and stayed there the rest of their lives. And so we have to start changing as the world changes and helping people. Often they're laid off and they have good ideas for starting a business, but they have no idea how to run the business or get it started. And with the help of these experts, those people are getting their business going. They're no longer unemployed and on being paid for things by taxpayers. They end up in employing others who are laid off from their jobs. And so that's the type of thing. And as we discuss, Mr. Chair, whether you decide to do it on an individual grants basis or a pool, that's to be determined later by you and the committee. But I think that this type of advisors are really extremely necessary for the present state of our economy. And with that, I'll turn it over first to Mike Tamale, who started the Neighborhood Development Center, and then he can introduce the other two witnesses.
Welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the tape and then proceed, we'd appreciate it.
So thank you very much for having us today. I'm up here with Grover Jones, who's the executive director of NEON, Northside Entrepreneur Opportunity Fund on the north side of Minneapolis, and Haiyan Vang, who's one of our almost 500 alumni that are in business today. And she has five locations for her business, including two on the east side of St. Paul, and one in South Minneapolis, and she'll tell you about it in a minute here. So I grew up on the east side of St. Paul. I went to Harding High School, and my parents were immigrants. My father didn't speak English that good when I was a kid. But he, in the old country, had been an attorney, highly educated, and did a lot of good things as a citizen of St. Paul in Minnesota. And I suppose from that background, the basic starting point of the Neighbor Development Center was born inside of me, which is to say that when you're looking at depressed areas of our city or our region and depressed economies, we have to look at every single person as being a contributor to revitalization and to a stronger economy. Every single person in Frogtown, every single person in Eden Prairie, every single person in Owatonna has assets and strengths and skills that they maybe have hidden inside of them because they don't speak the language as good as the next guy maybe. Maybe their education isn't valued here the way it was back where they came from. Maybe they haven't developed their education yet the way they would like to and are capable of. So we start from that basic premise that if we can reach these people in each one of our communities, maybe it's across language boundaries or other barriers, we can develop their own entrepreneurial dream and benefit our whole community. With that starting philosophy, NDC, the Neighbor Development Center, starting 20 years ago, began an approach that's unique nationally. It's now actually being replicated in Detroit, Michigan, in the inner city of Detroit, Michigan, whereby we start with partnerships with community-based organizations. It may be a small business association, it could be a church, it could be a community, a club of some sort or another. But we partner with organizations that are on the ground, that have the trust of people in their own community. They do the outreach for what we want to bring into that community, which is a 20-week-long entrepreneur training program. We do these entrepreneur training programs to teach low-income people that want to be entrepreneurs or that already are entrepreneurs how to write a business plan for their own business idea. We do this, by the way, in 5 different languages, because that's part of what it takes to reach all the untapped entrepreneurs in our state here. At the end of this 20 weeks of class, and the classes are out in their own community, we then sort of, they progress to the second stage of our program, which is financing. The bulk of these folks are not going to be able to access a loan from a bank or anywhere else. But we have money that we've assembled, some from the state of Minnesota, from DEED, some from the U.S. Treasury Department. We're a U.S. Treasury Department certified community development financial institution. Some from the U.S. Small Business Administration. So we have, you know, I think right now about $5 million of lending capital that we have put out on the street. To the people that come through our training classes. This is pretty heavily what you call character-based lending, because the other C's of credit are not usually their strong suit, but we know their character because they've come through this 20-week class. Once they get financing, they launch their business. We have launched, right now we believe there's 500 of our alumni who are in business. On average, they employ 3 people plus themselves, so that's over 2,000 jobs right now that these entrepreneurs have created, and they're paying payroll today and every day. Our cost for creating one of these jobs programmatically, according to Wilder Research, is $4,600 per job. Our cost programmatically of creating one of these businesses is a little over $18,000. These jobs are not high-end, but they're not minimum wage typically either. The average wage is over $11 an hour. So they're pretty good starter jobs, and they primarily go to people in their own neighborhoods. These businesses almost exclusively open in their own neighborhoods. So we're targeting entrepreneurs from inner city neighborhoods to start a business in their own neighborhood, stimulate their own economy, fill vacant storefronts, and become role models for other people in their own community. Once they get a loan from us, once they're in business, we then provide ongoing technical assistance free of charge for the most part. We're going to start charging now a little bit, but this is everything from free legal to accounting to merchandising to restaurant expertise, whatever it may be that they need. These entrepreneurs then become the new face of their own community, and they inspire their neighbors, their kids, to consider starting a business of their own as well, on the basic argument that if they can do it, I can do it. We are now moving out into the suburbs, so we've started entrepreneur training classes in Eden Prairie, Brooklyn Center, and Brooklyn Park, and we're looking to add additional locations, and we're starting to have more interaction with organizations in rural Minnesota, because this is a pretty unique approach. Collectively, our entrepreneurs return $68 million a year to the regional economy of which about half actually goes into their own inner city neighborhood. If you look at the annual report that we passed out, the sort of collage of photos on the front is all entrepreneurs from our program who were received awards last year at our annual banquet. On the back, you'll see what I just rattled through, which is our basic program of entrepreneur training, financing, and technical assistance. We also try to build up the capacity of organizations we work with to do more of this outreach, trying to really create a widespread understanding that low-income folks can be entrepreneurs or are entrepreneurs if they get developed the both economic and social benefits to the whole community are profound. And that's what we're trying to establish. How can that work? How has it worked? And what are the results from that? And then finally, as Representative Mullery mentioned, we have six different business incubators that we own and operate in partnership with other community groups that house about 120 of our entrepreneurs. You have a handout that looks like this. It's from Wilder Research. It has a little map on each side. What this is an example of how we track our impact on a particular neighborhood. So on one side, it tracks our impact on the east side of St. Paul. This is basically a one-mile radius around Arcade and Jenks. But in that one area, as of, I guess, 3 years ago now, just about, we had 27 of our alumni open for business, 141 jobs created, almost $3 million returned annually. And then the vast majority of these entrepreneurs saying that they are role models for their neighbors. A lot of them become leaders on boards of directors and so on. We have four targeted neighborhoods. The east side of St. Paul is one. If you flip it over, you see another one, which is around Lake in Chicago. We have a higher impact there because we have the Mercado Central. The Midtown Global Market. We have a number of our business incubators there. But you see there, just in that one-mile radius, we have 137 open businesses, 480 jobs, $13 million a year going back into the neighborhood from their payroll, their rent, et cetera. Folks obviously are also paying a lot of taxes.
Mr. Chair, can I just point out something? We don't actually have that document. I think the page is going to be... Oh, you have it over there?
It's in the system? Yeah.
Sure.
No, not in ours. No. It only got to the left side of the table. Okay.
the leaning left side of the table, right?
Sorry to interrupt. It's just interesting information. I wanted us all to have it. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Our entrepreneurs collectively pay over $7 million a year in tax in payroll and sales tax, among other taxes. So maybe with that, I'll wrap up my part of this and ask Grover Jones, the executive director of one of our partner organizations from the north side of Minneapolis called NEON, if he would speak.
Yes, my name is Grover Jones, Executive Director of NEON, which is Northside Economic
Mr. Jones, if I could just interrupt you just for a second, did everyone get the Wilder Research? So is there, are there other copies around?
I got one.
And if you could, see if you could find them and get them to them, I would appreciate it. Mr. Jones, I'm sorry to have interrupted you, but please proceed.
No problem. Again, my name is Grover Jones, director of NEON, which is Northside Economic Opportunity Network. And NEON is a very young organization. We've been incorporated for about 4 years. NEON was a collaborative effort between Northside with Neighborhood Development Center, West Broadway Coalition, Black Chamber of Commerce, the Empowerment Zone at that time, as well as Northway Community Trust. NEON is a partner with Neighborhood Development Center, and we actually deliver the training through Neighborhood Development Center for North Minneapolis. Our geographic focus as North Minneapolis is our primary focus. However, we do serve clients as far as Champlin, Burnsville, minority clients that really have no help in other areas. So Our geographic reach extends a little bit beyond North Minneapolis, even though that's our main foundation. The flagship of what we do in partnership with Neighborhood Development Center is the entrepreneur training piece. We've kind of taken it a step further in that our mix now is probably 70% new entrepreneurs but 30% existing businesses. We've adopted the philosophy of job creation, and we like to refer to it as micro businesses. And those are those businesses that are not really called small businesses because they're usually five people or under. And usually they can be a family business. But one of the things we've discussed with micro businesses, there's a lot of talk about job creation. And one thing we've discovered, it takes almost five times as many dollars to create a job as to keep a job and sustain a job. So we are now focusing on those businesses that need to have some viability and sustainability. And we do that similar with our partners with Neighborhood Development Center, and that's primarily with technical assistance. We found out that these small businesses, even though they know the craft, they don't really understand the business side of it. My background, my wife and I ran four different businesses for 25 years. And I was actually a telecommunications consultant and actually had contracts with the state. I had contracts with insurance companies. And we learned the hard way. I did a business without a business plan, got into trouble, and found out the value of the business plan. So now as we teach businesses, one way that I relate is to let them know I haven't always done things perfectly, and I can tell you both sides of the coin. In this economy, if you don't have a business plan, if you don't keep good records, if you don't pay taxes, you're going to quickly find yourself in trouble. So part of our technical assistance, we call it a holistic approach. We start with the personal financial situation. That is credit. That is, how do you handle your finances? That is what we call delayed gratification. How do you retain earnings in your company? And then again, how do you get employees? So as we start to work with businesses, we take a three-year approach. We've really started to look very heavily at how we do business. And we understood that, you know, we were taking a short-term approach with these businesses. You almost have to take a 3 to 5 year approach. You have to kind of monitor to see what happens with their income. Once that income comes in, what do you do with it? How do you reinvest it? So the philosophy that we see, especially in North Minneapolis, which I think was exacerbated by the tornado, is that we really have to start digging deep into helping these clients. We take a one-on-one approach. We do a lot of one-on-one consultation. It's very intensive, it's very costly, but in order for a business to succeed, they need that type of coaching. So not only do we provide coaching, we also hire other professionals to deliver services. For example, website development. We're now focusing on social media. How do you market with social media? We're starting to take a look at bookkeeping. A lot of businesses, the first thing you ask them for, let us see your books, and probably 80% don't have any. When your margin for error is short, you can't afford to do that. So now we're trying to get them on a regimen of regular record keeping. A couple of examples, even though we say micro businesses, a couple of our clients do home health care. One of our clients has over 60 employees. When they came to us, when the banks had a meltdown, she couldn't get a bank loan. And so they termed out her line of credit. She's going to have to lay off 3/4 of her workforce. She came to us, and what we did is we packaged the loan. We went to Neighborhood Development Center. We also went to another one of our partners. We put together a loan package. She retained those jobs. The next step is she could hire about 20 more people, but she needs working capital. Well, when you do that, it takes a lot of technical assistance. Yes, go ahead.
Representative Leiter, did you have a question?
I was going to wait to the end.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Please.
Another quick example is we've been working with a young individual who invested about $150,000 of his own money into his business to distribute products across the country. He recently got a $1 million contract with Walmart. One of the problems that he had was cash flow. He didn't fit the bank model. He wasn't able to get a loan. We packaged a loan, which was very extensive because we have to get our lenders an understanding of what he does, how the money gets paid, what does the cash flow look like. And again, we went back to our partner, Neighborhood Development Center, and we got him a $50,000 loan. Prior to that, we had already gotten him a $25,000 loan with Neighborhood Development Center and another $25,000 loan with the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. So even though NEON does not have our own loan fund, we package loans. Prior to NEON's inception, in North Minneapolis, there are probably about $20,000, $30,000 worth of business loans done a year. The first 3 years of NEON, we packaged over $1.75 million worth of loans and have done over $2 million worth of loans. Okay. So even though we don't have a loan fund, we're a very small organization, but what we do is collaborate with other nonprofits, such as NDC. By doing that, we can bring technical assistance to the table that we can't bring as a small organization. The other thing that we found out at NEON is why reinvent the wheel when there are other organizations already out there doing a good work. So let's partner with them. Let's find out what they do well, and we act as the hub. We do the intake, we do the assessment, we do the viability study, then we do a sustainability study. After we do that, then we send people into the class or for whatever they need. I commonly refer to NEON when we have classes. I tell them we're not a social service agency, we're business development. And business is tough and hard. And if you want to meet one of my employees, his name is Jimmy Lloyd. I call him Sarge. And I said, if you're going to go through Sarge and you make it through him, then you're ready to start a business. So we send a lot of our businesses through the paces. It's not easy. I don't think my wife and I together each work less than 60 hours a week while raising five boys. So we let them know that business is hard. I commonly refer to job avoidance, so that's not what it is. So if you're going to get into business, you're probably going to have an easier time working for somebody else. So having said that, I think now is a critical time when it comes to financing. We look at return on investment, and we think because of the tax rolls, we think of the revenue, we think of the impact to the company and to the community, that the return on investment is well worth it.
Representative, do you have a question?
I'm going to wait until after Ms. Feng.
I certainly appreciate Sarge. I ran a grocery store and hired a lot of kids over the years, and they were the fastest people I ever saw finding places to hide. But anyway, I look at what you're doing here is very similar to what I'd like to do in Greater Minnesota. There's a void of this. You have MEDA, you have Women Venture, you have a plethora of programs, and this is a very good one. In fact, we get this started. One of the things I'm going to make sure is they come visit you, see how you do it. The cost per job is on the high end. However, it's still within permissible area for me, because to get somebody trained in starting a business of their own for $5,000 a job, I think is remarkable. And Representative Mulry, I'm sure you're going to wholeheartedly approve of the plan I start for Greater Minnesota. But I'm looking forward to hearing more, and I think this is a great program. MEDA is a great program also. Similar but different. Yeah. You start out at the bottom. They have the same thing that you have, only they are maybe a little rung above yours. Maybe.
Yeah, they're up the ladder.
Yeah, up the ladder.
A little ways, yeah.
Hi, my name is Hai Yen Vang, and my husband and I...
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a couple of questions. You mentioned return on investment and everything else. How do you measure that in an organization like you have?
Interesting you'd ask that. What some of the things that we're starting to see in government funding and also in foundation funding is what we call pay for service. And as we start to look at return on investment, a lot of our funders are saying, how are you going to measure this? Well, here's the simplest way to say it. The first thing we do is look at a personal financial statement, assets versus liabilities, and to determine net worth. Most of our clients have a negative net worth. Once you have that snapshot, the next thing you have to do is look at that snapshot in like 6 month increments. What impact do we have on that personal financial statement 6 months, 1 year, 1.5 years. Did we improve the net worth? In other words, do we help them eliminate some of the liabilities and improve their assets? When you take it to the business model, we look at the balance sheet. And on the balance sheet, the way we look at that are taking snapshots of basically, again, assets and liability. How do you retain funds in your company? How do you grow your business? We can look at, we can take a measurement based on income, but that's a little bit deceiving because you can have $100,000 coming in 1 year, but if your profit's only like $10,000, doesn't say a lot. I'd rather make $50,000 and have $25,000 profit. So we look at bottom line, but we have to take it beyond just the business because we have to take it from what is the revenue that comes out of business into the family. So our measurement is a personal financial statement, and the business is balance sheet, and then the third measurement is tax returns. And that is, what are we seeing? Are you showing profit on your tax returns? How much are you paying in taxes? It's a common theme I call have your cake and eat it too. We get a lot of businesses, they want a loan. We get their tax returns, and they're showing losses, and they could have shown that they made money. I said, you know, if you're going to go get a loan, you're going to need to start paying some taxes. So let's kind of get that revenue out there. So we encourage our businesses to be a taxpayer. So I think those are the three measurements, the way we measure return on investment.
And a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Excellent, excellent answer. In terms of accounting standards then for your startup incubated businesses and things, what type of accounting standards are you using?
Generally, we look at we start off. If it depends on where you are on the continuum. If you're a new business, we kind of look at some similar accounting like QuickBooks, for example. But let's say you're a more progressive, growing business. Basically, what we do, because I'm not an expert in accounting, we hire accountants, and the accountants will come in. They will take a look at. They'll determine if they do need to do it on a cash basis or if they need to do it in some other model. So it's not one size fits all, and that's why when we do these assessments, we have to look at the type of business. We also have to look at the size of the business. It's similar to entity formation. When we form an entity, it depends on what the business is doing. Some businesses are going to need to be a corporation, LLC. So when you look at accounting, you know, there's all different types of standards.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Vang.
Hi, my name is Haiyan Vang. My husband and I are business owners here in the Twin Cities. We own 5 clothing stores. And, you know, the stores are located, 2 on the east side, 1 in South Minneapolis on Lake in Chicago, 1 in Brooklyn Park, and 1 that's coming up, grand opening will be March 1st in Spring Lake Park. And that's the 5th location. We currently employ 16 employees, but by the end of February we'll have 20 employees because of the new location. Within the next 5 years, we plan to open at least 5 more locations, so that would make us a total of 10 stores within the Twin Cities and surrounding areas. We got our start from NDC about 9 years ago. I was actually pregnant, unemployed, with our second child. My husband has a job at Walmart, and so that pays a little bit over minimum wage. With us not having a college education and just having our GED, we didn't have much opportunities out there. So one day I just, you know, I saw a letter. I think it's a letter in the mail or a flyer. And it says to take classes, business classes in my neighborhood, which was North Minneapolis. And, you know, I was like, why not? Why not try this business classes, you know, just to see what I can learn and what I can, you know, what I can do, you know. So I tried it. 16 weeks, 8 one-on-one with the instructor, 8 2-hour session with the classroom. And 16 weeks later, I was able to write a business plan. I was taught step-by-step of how to run a successful business. So the spring of 2004, that was the classes, and by October of 2004, we were able to open our first retail location on the corner of 38th and Nicollet in South Minneapolis. And we started there with a 800 square foot store, and now we have 5 location, which ranges from 800 square foot to 3,000 square foot. So all these places that we are in business now, we've, you know, the places has been vacant for a long time. You know, storefronts has been vacant, and the minute we, you know, we moved in, we encourage, you know, other business owner to open up their business next door. And one of it was Chicago and Lake Street. When we moved in there, you know, Butler Drugs used to be on the corner, but then they had a, you know, new owner went in and bought the building, renovated it. So that he had the whole building vacant, and then so T-Mobile moved in. Well, actually, Foot Locker. Then we moved in, and you know, and then the rest. You know, more small businesses moved in, and corporates too. So, yeah. So it's really exciting. You know, the staff that we hire for our stores are, you know, a lot of them are just high school students or college students, and so most of them has no experience or little experience. And we give them this opportunity, you know, we start them off at minimum wage, but within 3 to 6 months, most of them become key holders, you know, and so we're able to give them raises, you know, and even with a key holder position, last year we made it where, you know, they're able to have vacation hours, you know, for all our key holders, you know. So this could be like a 16-year-old or 17-year-old or even a 23-year-old. You know, I mean, very young employees, and they're able to have vacation hours, and we also offer IRA. So which, it's fantastic, you know what I mean? And we also match our, you know, the IRA up to 3% of their annual income. So, you know, we're trying our best to make sure that we take responsibilities as an employers, you know what I mean, to develop these jobs and train our employees so then even if they don't stay with us, you know, they can go anywhere else and do better, you know what I mean, and just that opportunity. We have to start somewhere, like how NDC gave us a chance when we, you know, at that time back in 2004, we didn't have good credit. You know, we were behind on some payments, some mortgage payments, and banks are not going to give us loans. We went to Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, TCF, you name it. You know, NDC actually helped and took us there, you know what I mean, and worked with some of the banker, but we still couldn't get a business loan. So in the end, we were actually able to get one from NDC, and, you know, now it's the sky's the limit, you know. And we're grateful. And then every year when NDC has their small business classes that they offer, we actually, several times we were asked to come and speak and, you know, just to give back. And, you know, so a lot of it, you know, we still keep in great contact with NDC. Recently, one of the, you know, we wanted a space, we wanted to rent a space off of University Avenue to have our 6th location. And we called NDC up and said, hey, you know, you guys are down on University. You work greatly with that, you know, University Avenue. What can you do, you know what I mean, for us? What can you help us with? And they showed us some spaces, and that was fantastic. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Representative Mulley, did you have some closing remarks?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if it's closing, but I wanted to add a few things. There may be other questions. But when a few months after Governor Dayton became governor, he visited the North Side for a summit on the issue of African American employment, and everyone there that basically said that this type of program was what was really needed. We needed to get employment and jobs going within the community, and this is true of a lot of communities around the state. I know that I've worked with the business development people at Minneapolis, and they've talked about how important both NDC and NEON are, and other organizations like that, for getting businesses going, employing people in Minneapolis. With regard to Representative Gunther and whether I'd support something, Representative Gunther, as you know, since about the first 3 weeks of my being here many years ago, you and I have worked together to help each other, and even on the extent of a real pork project in a certain person's district.
And I think there was a question here from Representative Fabian before somebody gets in trouble. Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, I want to come back to then after the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's nice that you're wearing a striped shirt underneath your suit there, the referee shirt. Ms. Vang, I've got a question. You said that you pay minimum wage to your starting employees. Yeah. What rate do you pay?
$7.25, but eventually when they become key holder or every 6 months based on performance, we do give a 25-cent raise, which is fantastic. I'm pretty proud just because we're a small business, you know what I mean? And, you know, sometimes we have up to five employees, but to be able to pay, you know, give a raise every 25 cents, you know what I mean? It's pretty amazing every 6 months.
I take it a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're very perceptive. Thank you. So if the minimum wage were to be raised to, say, $9.25 or $10.50 an hour. Your comments, please.
You know, recently I watched the news, and they said they were debating, you know, I saw on the news they were debating on giving a raise, minimum wage, what, $7.50 was it? And, you know, $9 is high. But, you know, if that's what the law is, we can do that. You know what I mean? A lot of times we cut our own payroll, you know what I mean, just so we can make sure that our staff is taken care of. And, you know, sometimes people always ask us, you know, how do you guys do it? You have five children and five businesses. How do you do that? You know, and we always tell them we have fantastic staff members, and we take care of our staff. So, you know, with a hike in minimum wage, we can do that. I think, you know, it's a struggle, but, you know, we will make it work.
And Ms. Vang, what, if I might ask, are your gross sales over 500,000?
This 2012, it's 1.5 million. Okay. So we're pretty proud. We're looking at, by the end of this year, it's going to be over 2 million.
Yay. Because under if your gross sales are not over, depending on which particular bill comes along,
right?
If you go with the federal matching federal regulations, mm-hmm. if your gross sales are not over 500,000, I don't think they're. We'll have them in here, but it's a different minimum wage. I don't even know if there is an actual minimum wage if you're going with the federal number and your gross sales are 500,000 or less. So. Representative Leidig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, I'm very impressed, Mr. Jones, Ms. Fang, with your discussion here today. It's wonderful, and I think these kinds of programs are very important. Ms. Fang, are you at a point now where you're seeking regular business bank loans for your future openings? Are you in that kind of position now?
You know, we actually, when we got the loan from NDC back in 2004, I believe we paid it off by beginning of 2006, maybe even earlier. Right now, every store that we open, we finance our own. So we don't need any lending. We have our own capital.
Great. Super.
Thank you.
Is there a follow-up?
Yes, please. And Mr. Tamale, I'm interested in if you could tell us, has all the dollars from the original appropriation 2007, have those all been used? And then I guess what goes along with that is, what kind of a default rate do you see? Or have you seen over the last few years?
Mr. Trump.
So to go backwards on your questions, our default rate in 2012, or write-off rate, is 5.5% approximately. Historically, we've been more like at 8% write-off. And pretty much 100% of who we finance are non-bankable. So we get 92% repaid historically, almost 95% last year. We feel that's pretty good, given our target market. In 2007, I believe we
were funded by the Minnesota legislature specifically for the Midtown Global Market. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. So that money was used for the project that you have this brochure on, the Midtown Global Market and the old Sears building on Lake Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that was extremely critical money for both building the market out more, because at that time it was very new and there was a lot of improvements we needed to make, as well as marketing the market and covering some cash flow shortages. So that was what that was for. We use deed money in two ways right now. One is urban initiative loan funds, where we've actually, last I knew anyway, we were the most active urban initiative lender in their program, and we continue to use that program a lot. And so that's a matching program where we match urban initiative loan dollars on any given loan that we use it for. But now we're also mixing in SBA loan dollars and Treasury Department loan dollars, and we have foundation loan dollars as well. The other money we've received recently from the state was through DEED's competitive grant program last year, which was for this type of work. And we're very supportive of that process, and I guess would encourage increased funding for that if that's possible. But that seemed to work out real good. Last year, I believe in 2012, we received somewhere around $150,000 that we used for technical assistance and loan officer time and training. And with that dollar amount, we just sort of, if you take our average cost per business and business startup, we can, on average, we can launch about 8 new businesses for that kind of money, and provide, and which will then turn around and create another 33 jobs. So that's using those same ratios I talked about earlier.
Thank you.
Can I follow up, please?
Yes, go right ahead.
Thank you. So I'll go to my prime question, which is private funding. Do you get private funding?
Yes.
At all?
Yes.
Yes?
Mostly we have, I guess what you call private funding. We have a $2 million operating budget that covers our training program. We trained about 220 people last year in these 20-week classes. We made about 40 loans a year, a few more last year. We provide, I think it was 5,000 hours of one-on-one technical assistance to business, to our alumni businesses last year. And let's see, about, well over half of that came from foundations and corporate support. 150 came from DEED, from that competitive grant program. So really, you know, what's that, 5 to 7% of our budget last year came from the state. But we do get some technical assistance money from the SBA and the U.S. Treasury CDFI.
And Mr. Tamale, other than the Midtown Market infusion back in, I think it was 2006 or 2007, that's, you would not have gotten any money unless you had been in the competitive grant program, correct?
Right.
Okay. Can I move on to?
Yes.
Representative Kiefer.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Vang, in addition to potential wage increases, would the expansion of the sales tax in your clothing store affect you? Are you worried about any impact on your business there?
I am worried about the sales tax on clothing, you know, that has been talked about recently, that I've been watching the news and I'm just struggling because, you know, everything in our store is $10 or less, and we have a sign that says $10 rack right in front, you know, and that's the business name. With the tax increase, it is going to be, you know, it is hard, just because this is for, we're selling, you know, really wonderful, you know, women's jeans, dresses, shoes for the whole family, but no, not the whole family, just for the woman in the family. But and you know, this is younger, you know, lower income family that we, you know, we do business with, and so for them, let's just say during back to school season, when a family comes in and, you know, they need to buy some jeans or clothing for their daughters, you know, for going back to school. You know, $10 is a lot of money for a lot of people. You know, and then now that's there's if there's going to be taxes on that, it's hard.
No.
Oh, no, there won't be, but the debate, is that the question that they're talking about, the sales sales tax?
Chairman, I think you answered the question. Thank
well,
you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank it might be important to clarify what the governor's position.
I think there's a number of people who have wanted to jump in here. I think what people would really like to jump in and say is that in the proposal that's out there, it's nothing under $100. So okay. I think that covers the particular scenes how you have a $10 rack. And you know, if you want to, you can continue to bring it up, Representative Kiefer. I know that's the role that you're going to play, and I suspect we're going to hear it every day. And at a certain point, it, you know, when I'll just keep calling on you. Representative Albright, I think, had a question, and then it's Representative Isaac.
You covered what I was going to say. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. One for Mr. Jones first. This is an impressive program, in my opinion, just from the credentialing of your board of directors, many of whom I've met or heard speak. I'm just curious from the standpoint of when you talk about the teaching of the courses, who actually does the teaching of the courses? Do the board of director members get involved in that at all?
Mr. Jones.
Well, there's a couple of ways that we teach. First of all, our entrepreneur training classes are taught by NDC independent contractors. So because we partner...
Could I just interrupt you and just interject? When you say independent contractors, and they're... So are they business people that are hired by you?
Maybe you can answer that real quick.
So, thank you. These are Neighbor Development Center trainers, and they have three characteristics. One is that they have in-depth small business knowledge, either as a former business owner or a business lender, business consultant. Number two, that they know how to teach. So my wife's a teacher, and I know all about the fact that that's a whole different world.
What you're saying is you're never going to hire me.
And number three, that they are able to relate well to that particular community. So typically they're trainers that are from that community. And we talk about community in two ways. One is geographic, like neighborhoods, and the other is ethnic. Mm-hmm. So we have classes, like I said earlier, in Eden Prairie that are Somali. So we'll have typically a Somali trainer for that. But that trainer is going to be real deep in business and competent at training.
And in fact, I was a trainer for NDC for about 4 years. So I did, about three classes a year besides running Neon. And then it became a little bit too too much work. So I haven't done that in the last year, but I was also a trainer.
Any follow-ups?
Yes, sir. Mr. Albright. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question actually is for Ms. Vang. You've probably become aware of the fact that we're contemplating a change of historic proportions in terms of how health care is provided in this state, the largest decision in the last 50 years with regard to that issue. How do you frame your concerns about providing health care or consideration of not providing health care for your employees?
You know, that was hard. I believe that you have to be a corporation of 50 employees or more to qualify. So right now at this point we're 22 employees if we're counting the myself and my husband. But I have within our business itself we do offer health care. We do offer it to our key holders. For those that, and I believe the business pays 50% of the premium, and the employees can elect, whatever they want. But then a lot of times they can't afford it because of their wages. And so that it was, something that eventually we will have to sit down, my husband and I and our consultant, and talk about what we can do to, when we get to that point where we do have to offer the, you know, to everyone. We do offer it to employees, but most of them can't afford it again. So it's either, you know, the business paying more, you know, of their monthly payment, or, you know, again, or cut their hours so then that we don't have to offer that to everyone, you know, and that's hard, you know, when they're working, you know, so hard for you, how can you treat them like that? Why wouldn't you want to take care of your employees? So that's just a hard decision that we're working on it, but we haven't, you know, right now we do offer it to any of our key holders, which is 90% of our staff. But again, most of them don't elect it because of the cost.
Thank you, Ms. Fang. Members, we've got probably about, and I think it's another, we've already gone about 45 minutes. I think Representative Norton has a question, and then I'm going to look for some closing remarks from Representative Mulry, and hold this bill over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine's more of a generic question. I appreciate all the work, and I'm very impressed with a lot of the testifiers. All of you did a really nice job. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if you're the one that can answer this, and perhaps the testifiers can, but I'm looking at trying to understand, and I came in a few minutes late, so if it was... if this has already been addressed, I apologize. The Neighborhood Development Center, how does that compare to the, like, in my area, Rochester has the Rochester Area Economic Development Center. Is it the same thing, but a smaller version, or is this in addition to what would be in your area an economic development center? I'm trying to get an understanding of the myriad of opportunities out there for these types of programs and how you fit in with those others.
Mr. Toy, if you'd care to answer that one, because I can't.
I love Rochester. I've never heard of that organization, so I'm going to guess is that a public entity or a quasi-public entity? Yeah, so we're not. We're a 501c3 nonprofit.
Mr. Chair, may I continue?
Follow-up, Representative Norton.
Okay, so, and maybe, again, you don't know this, and I'll ask staff to kind of help me understand how many other organizations like yours there are in the state of Minnesota. It seems to me the Minneapolis Twin Cities area has a myriad of opportunities that aren't necessarily statewide, so I'm just kind of trying to get a handle on what would be your counter partner in a rural area, or do you even look at yourself that way? You just do your job, and obviously you do it very well, and you don't care what happens to the rest of the state. But as a legislator, I need to, so I'm just trying to get a handle on that.
Would you be able to answer that one, Mr. Tamale?
More or less, I can. I've been doing this for a long time, so you know, it seems like there's a lot in the Twin Cities, but there's probably 5 or 6 organizations in the Twin Cities that are involved sort of roughly in this kind of work, whether, you know, one of them specifically works with women, and another works with sort of larger minority-owned businesses, and one works with Latino businesses, and one works with East African immigrant businesses, and then there's us, and that's kind of the frame, that's kind of the horizon here in the Twin Cities. In rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota, there's an outstanding kind of national model out of Northeast Minnesota called Northeast Entrepreneur Fund, run by Mary Matthews out of Duluth. Mm-hmm. And up on the range, they have a couple places, and they're well known and nationally regarded. There are, you know, the initiative foundations in a number of places, some of which have microloan funds. Mm-hmm. So the one out of Little Falls does, and I believe the one that Tim Penny runs has a microloan fund in southern Minnesota. What you're referring to, I believe, are economic development sort of agencies of either a city or a county government, which I'm just not all that familiar with other than around here, but the ones I'm familiar with do a variety of things, including trying to attract new businesses into their area, and help them how they can. But, you know, there's also, you know, the Chambers of Commerce and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We actually operated a loan fund statewide for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce a few years ago during the recession. Got to know a number of the players around the state in that regard. So there are different entities out there doing different things, but what NDC does is kind of a real particular niche and unique. And in general, it's kind of at the toughest end, you might say, the micro, the startup, the lowest income end of the whole spectrum of where you can land if you're doing small business development.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that answer. And I guess, you know, as a committee member here who will be looking at a lot of these bills, I'm hoping maybe we could ask Deed at some point to come forward and kind of give us a robust picture of what all is out there. I do know we have, you had the African Development Center listed on your list. We have one in Rochester that's affiliated with the one in the Twin Cities, actually. And I know they have a request that's going to be very similar to yours. I haven't seen it yet, but they approached us earlier saying it was coming forward. So as all these start coming in, I just was kind of trying to get a flavor for how many we might be talking about and what kind of funds. And we'll just look at them as they come. Thank you.
Representative Norton, I hope all the ones that are coming are not going to do a 1-hour presentation, although this is a very good lesson for our members to understand what a small amount of dollars can mean to a community and to a region. And I don't mean that to slight you at all. I think that you have done a great job, and Representative Mullery bent my ear for about 45 minutes yesterday as to singing the praises. And anybody that grew up on the East Side has got to be a good guy.
That's what I'm saying, you know. Thank you.
So, as members, this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So, some brief remarks by Representative Mullery, and then I'm going to listen to anyone, and then I'm going to gavel us closed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Something that, and there are places around the state, different places where there's high unemployment. When we have communities with 30-40% unemployment, this state has to do something, because that's a dysfunction for our state. And these neighborhood businesses are really a way of getting at that issue. And one thing that hasn't been brought up is people that are unemployed for a long time, they become harder to employ, as do another issue that wasn't mentioned, and that's the issue of people who are ex-felons are hard to employ. And in my other role here on public safety, we're trying to find ways to get jobs for people, and having lived my whole life on the north side, I know an awful lot of people of all races, doesn't matter whether you're white or a person of color, who have been in prison and had an awful time getting a job. They got started in a small business, started their own, and now are pillars of the community with a lot of people in them, and I'm getting the sign to wind up, but I hope you'll remember all of the advantages of these types.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. Representative Gunther, did you have some?
I just think we should move House File 46 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. I think Representative Mullery
already moved it.
Took care of that earlier. So, having said that. Doesn't call for a vote at this particular point, so thank you all. Any other comments or questions? Thank you. With that, the committee rests, stands adjourned.